If you'd like to get involved with Shoreditch Radio, or if you run any local projects or events, please contact us at info@shoreditchradio.co.uk.
Hello, we're Vivo.
Hi, this is Dave from Lois and Love.
This is Dave from Britain.
I'm Miranda from the FMEs.
I am Colin Peters.
I'm Lewis from Champion Club.
Hello, this is Carl Burrell.
Hey, this is Rita Ora, and you're listening to Shoreditch Radio.
Yes!
You're listening to Shoreditch Radio. Shoreditchradio.co.uk.
I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again. So watch it. Drink it in. Aguero.
Navidad con Titi Henry. Henry para Messi. Messi, el pase para Henry es buenísimo. Henry.
And it looked like it was in. It come back off the bend on Tony.
Para Alves con Messi, Messi para Xavi. Vamos a ver qué hace Xavi. Esconde el balón, Xavi. Qué balón para Messi, Messi puede marcar Messi. Gol, 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 gol de Messi.
As the Premier League season draws to its inevitable close, this weekend saw Chelsea take a giant step towards the trophy with a 1-0 win over Manchester United. And while it would take a brave man to bet against the West Londoners, even with six games still to play, the relegation battle at the foot of the table looks as though it will keep us guessing right up until the final day. Also on today's show, after in-form Arsenal and a resurgent Aston Villa booked their places in this year's FA Cup final, we revisit two typically dramatic semi-final ties. Is there more to Tim Sherwood as a manager than some great touchline celebrations and that gilet? All before we speak to an old friend of the show, Arsenal Mo, about the secret to Arsenal's newfound consistency. We'll of course round off the show as we always do with everyone's favourite feature, Take a Bow, and we've got a decent little playlist in store for you as well. Good God, it feels good to be back here at Shoreditch Radio HQ to invite you to help us kick some sense back into football and to welcome you to In Off The Post. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Adonis and welcome to the show on another beautiful day here at Shoreditch Radio. And weather, with the weather, as it has been lately, I can only imagine that so many of our listeners are, you know, sitting at their desks, staring blankly out of the nearest window and daydreaming about running through sprinklers and dry-humping the aircon in the office. But don't worry, okay, because In Off The Post is back to help you get over that 3 o'clock midweek hump and through the rest of the week with a smile on your face. So settle in for the next hour as we carefully administer that weekly dose of reality after another intoxicating weekend of football. And join in the debate online. Follow us on Twitter at IOTP Show or leave us a comment on the fan page at facebook.com/ShoreditchRadioIOTP. Now we can go no further before I introduce my co-host for the hour. You all know him as our resident betting guru, the slightly deluded Manchester United fan, or maybe just that dude off In Off The Post with a really sweet voice. But after this weekend and my engagement party, I now also know him as my future groomsman, my usher. And for the Greek Cypriot listening contingent, Michael Mbaro, John Christodoulou, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
You like that little introduction?
Yeah, very well. Excellent.
Are you happy with the slightly deluded Manchester United fan comment?
I'll live with it for now. Yeah, we'll see it come the end of the season.
And let's talk about the engagement party, because, you know, for those unlucky listeners who weren't there, it was a great event, right?
Fantastic. I think it was better for some than others.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No.
I may or may not have been tucked up in bed by 1 o'clock.
One?
Is it what? Did I not even make it? Come on, I must have made it.
Yeah. Well,
and of course, you know, Sod's Law, the engagement party had to fall on Arsenal semi-final with Reading. Mm-hmm. And of course, the game went to extra time. You know, guests were turning up 7:30. I didn't even acknowledge
Sorry,
them.
Party's not started yet.
Well, look, you know, if it says on an invitation 7:30 start, don't turn up before 8.
No.
Come on, really?
8:30. You're fashionably late, right?
Now, look, it's been a while since we were last in here, and we do have a lot of making up to do to our wonderful listeners. So I'm going to kick things off with a big tune today, let everyone know that we really mean business. And when we return, we're going to dive right in, okay?
Excellent.
All right, here we go. Kendrick Lamar with the track of the new album, To Pimp a Butterfly. What a name. And the track, These Walls. If these walls could talk. Sex. She just wanna close her eyes and sway. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Kendrick Lamar there with These Walls. And John, a lot has happened since the last show. But as it stands, and despite, let's be honest, a pretty underwhelming second half of the season, Chelsea are 10 clear atop the Premier League tree and now just 6 points away from winning their first league trophy in 5 years. Let's hear a little bit of that heartbreaking goal.
Falcao on the turf. Fabregas for Oscar, played in for Eden Hazard, scores for Chelsea!
There it is, and in a rather poetic way, you know, their 1-0 victory over your team, Man United, at the Bridge on Saturday afternoon, kind of epitomised the way they've been playing since our last show together. So, I mean, what have you made of them?
I think the performance on Saturday sort of said it all. Attacking-wise, they've lacked a bit, obviously, injuries have probably been the source of that, but...
Well, injuries to who? I think they've got away with it this season, largely.
In terms of a recognised striker, they've been a bit unlucky with Costa, and then you've got Remy, who you think is your backup striker, and he's also succumbed to injury, and then you've got Drogba, who's a 37-year-old, who was once amazing, and now probably not so much. They do have attacking talent in other areas, and obviously you just mentioned Hazard, who is just fantastic, but... Oscar as well, that back heel, super. But they knew what they had to do on Saturday. They, for all our possession, for all just having the ball and passing it and keeping it, which was lovely to see, we didn't do anything with it. And for Chelsea, that was perfect. We just played in front of them. They knew that if they'd got a goal, that they could sit on it. And I think few other teams can do that with such confidence. And I think...
Do you think that they've been doing that for a while now? I mean, the flares kind of...
The game against QPR, okay. You could say they were a little bit lucky there. One shot on target, 87th minute, 87th, 89th
yeah,
minute.
88th, 89th, yeah, maybe even so, later. And again, that man, Eden Hazard.
Riding their luck. So, I think they'll see out. They need to beat you guys and then win one more game.
Against Leicester.
Who are in good form.
Yeah, and they're not going to beat us either. Yeah. So. No, but in all seriousness, I think Jose Mourinho would definitely agree with you. I mean, he actually said after the game, and... I'm not sure if you're going to agree with this comment, but he said that United's important players were in our pockets.
Yeah.
And it was a match in which everything went exactly as we wanted. So, I mean, was it really... I mean, it's always difficult to read into a Jose Mourinho
post-match
interview.
I think he's gloating a little bit in terms of if it just went well. I mean, to him, it's going to look like a tactical masterpiece. But I think had we had different players on the pitch as well, I think we were unlucky not to have Carrick. For me, I think we missed him the most.
Not just him. You were missing Jones, you were missing Rojo, a few.
Left-sided players. Shaw did well, he came back in. But for me, it was having a forward passer in midfield. I know we put Rooney there, but although he can spray the ball wherever you want, he's not the same as Carrick. And then, as a result, we missed his influence up top. Mm-hmm. I've kind of reached the end of my tether with Falcao. You've wanted him to do well so badly, and it's just not happening. So I wonder what will happen with him at the end of the season. But had we had Rooney up front and someone to supply him with, because Mata didn't really get enough time to create chances. Herrera, I thought, was very, very tidy, mm-hmm. but he's not really a defensive midfielder. I would have liked to have seen him flourish more in, not an attacking role, but more of a central midfielder.
Well, and
role.
Again, this was kind of what Jose Mourinho was alluding to in the post-match interview, that they focused on what they felt were your patterns of play, either getting it wide to players who like to come inside and cross the ball onto their stronger feet, mm-hmm. and the direct pass, he had to mention that, didn't he? The direct ball to Fellaini, which Kurt Zouma was tasked to, with cutting out. And I mean, they've pulled it off.
I think we saw it against Liverpool and Tottenham that we targeted that right back. Mm-hmm. So Young, whoever was the left back, mm-hmm. which would have been Blint or Rojo, and then Fellaini just attacking that right back. And that's why he played Zuma, because he knew he had the height and he had the strength to contend with Fellaini. But you've also got Ivanovic. He's not the quickest of right backs when you compare him to the other types of players. Very, very strong and disciplined player. So in that sense, you could say, yeah, he got it all right. Mm. That's probably our fault. We should have known that was going to happen and come up with, a plan B.
Perhaps.
But never worked out. And on another day, we had that little bit more luck in front of goal. We didn't create that many chances, but had Rooney's
early one got
when I was up cheering and I felt like an idiot afterwards. But could have been a different game.
Absolutely. But I mean, let's go back to that man Eden Hazard, because we've mentioned him twice now, rescuing points for Chelsea, and he's been doing it pretty much all season. Player of the Year is going to be announced soon. Is he your Player of the Year?
I'd probably agree with that. I'd say so. He's been arguably the most consistent. Not being too unlucky with injuries, where you say other people who might have challenged him for the prize, like Aguero, maybe Costa, could have got in front, but they've been unlucky with injuries. Harry Kane, been fantastic, 30 goals, but he's more likely to win Young Player of the Season. But
and I think that would be right. Both of them I'm not happy with the geezer being in there for a nomination anyway.
Harry Kane?
Yeah, I'm not having that. I'm not having that. Bursting onto the scene, it has been a very good season, but I can't even begin to place him in the same bracket as players like Eden Hazard and Alexis Sanchez. I can't believe anyone else would either.
It's, 30 goals a season is no mean feat.
True, and playing for a club like Spurs, it's even more difficult. But no, I'm definitely not having that. And Eden Hazard, let me just get some stats off for you now, I'll ring him out. He's had a hand in 15 goals in his last 17 Premier League appearances. That's 8 goals, 7 assists. So, forget how good he was in the first half of the season. He's gone from strength to strength. He's improved as the season's worn on. And that is, considering how long and difficult a Premier League season is, it's a fantastic achievement. And I think he deserves it.
Well, like I said, I completely agree. In terms of, he's been Chelsea's saviour when they've missed them the attacking strike force that you expect them to have. And he's been there, he doesn't lead the line, but he just ghosts around.
Affects games.
Yeah. So, completely agree.
leaps and bounds. And I think he really would be a deserving winner. And let's get back to Man United. We were talking about what Jose Mourinho made of the game. What Louis van Gaal made of the game was really something to behold. And let's just have a little listen to what
Louis, do you feel unlucky not to have won today's game?
It doesn't matter how I feel, I think.
But on possession and the amount of time you spent in Chelsea's half, would you say that you were at least as good as they were?
I don't have to say it. In football, it's only counting the goals. And they scored one goal. Was the first shot on the goal. And against, I believe, Crystal Palace, it was in the 19th minute, so they did it better today.
Are you frustrated by what you've seen?
I'm not frustrated. I'm very proud of my team. Why I have to be frustrated?
Just at losing the game?
We played the best match of the season.
Is that how highly you rate the performance, yeah?
Yeah, you don't?
No, I'm just interested in how you see it.
Okay. That's good. That you are interested.
You changed things around today because you had to. Did it work exactly as you intended it to, with Wayne Rooney back in midfield? And
when I say that we have played the best match of the world, and is this a rhetorical question, I think.
What about the incident at the end? Should you have had a penalty?
Then, when you want to evaluate the referee, then also you have to evaluate the first goal. And in my opinion, that's the main decision of the referee.
Are you taking issue with what you feel maybe is a foul on Falcao?
Maybe you can watch on television, repetition, maybe.
So do you think it was a foul on Falcao in the build-up, yeah?
So, you know that? No, okay.
Thanks, Louis. Thank you very much.
Okay, cheers.
I mean, can you believe... I mean, have you ever heard a more awkward interview in your life? I mean, I honestly felt like that interviewer wanted the ground to swallow him up there and then. I mean, he claimed it was their best performance of the season. Now, I make that the fourth time that he's claimed that after a game this season.
Because we keep playing better.
Okay, so you're improving. Okay, it's either that or he really is as mad as I think he is. But, I mean, he does have a point, doesn't he? When you look at the amount of possession that you had at Stamford Bridge, I think it was just over 70%, as well as 15 shots to Chelsea's 7. You said you didn't create too many chances. The stats tell a different story. Mm. And you completed 665 passes, while Chelsea managed a mere 284.
Mm-hmm. You have to look at those stats in the context of, firstly, them chances, were any of them like strong chances? Falcao hit the crossbar, maybe could have done better. The Rooney chance we've already mentioned. But Chelsea's probably had clearer cut chances in their 7 than we did in our 15. And when you look at the passing statistics, yeah, we passed the ball around them, basically, for 90 minutes. And a lot of it was between our centre-backs, between our midfield, going back and forth. There was no penetration and no... just creativity. We were just lacking something. So, yeah, it was great. We had the ball. But if you're not doing anything with it, then it's kind of pointless.
Fair enough. And, you know? And just quickly, was that a foul on Falcao?
I think it's a foul.
Okay,
fair enough. I mean, okay, he could be stronger. He could be stronger. But at the end of the day, he's gone through the back of him. Mm. So I think it's a foul.
Okay, I think
but
I
saying
agree
that, the defending
anyway.
After that is poor. And it's the one time Herrera doesn't track his runner as well. The back heel is quality. You see Valencia as well. He stops short. Yep. Doesn't even try running with Hazard. Probably because you know he's away.
Where he was. Yeah. So yeah, fair enough. And look, but you have intimated that you were kind of pleased with United's performance and their performances of late. And, you know, it's interesting because before, and I guess right throughout the winter period, if you will, it was United who, at least in my opinion, were playing poorly and still picking up the points. You know, I remember us doing a show right after the Southampton game. Yeah. I think it was 2-1 Van Persie, right?
Yeah.
And everyone was talking about how lucky you were. And of course, it's not really about luck. It's, you know, teams are going to blow hot and cold throughout the course of a long season. And those teams who are still up there fighting for the top four are those who manage to pick up points even when they weren't playing that well. It's something that Chelsea are going to do right until the end of the season. Something that United have managed to do this year. So I guess what I want to know is, at least in your opinion, how far have United come under Louis van Gaal this season? You know, have you improved? Or, you know, just because I think it's interesting that players like Mata, Fellaini, and you even mentioned Shaw, players who I believe were signed by David Moyes. I could even attribute Herrera, who I think has been fantastic, to the David Moyes kind of era, if you can call it one, you're an era. And, you know, you've got the centre-back duo of Smalling and Jones. That's starting to emerge. That was obviously something that Sir Alex Ferguson envisioned years ago. And these things are all starting to flourish now. These players are all starting to blossom. So where is Van Gaal's influence in all of this?
I think, going back to the original question, in terms of we have come along leaps and bounds. A lot of that is down to we're finally getting a regular 11. And I think in the first six months of his reign, our injuries were, it was an injury crisis. One of the reasons we didn't do well is because we never had a regular 11. We didn't know who our back four was going to be. It's one of the reasons I think De Gea has done so well, because the guy doesn't know who's going to play in front of him, which is hard as a goalkeeper. Mm. But we missed Carrick. We missed a 20-goal-a-season goal scorer, and we finally put him up front, and yeah, all of a sudden you're scoring goals. And we're playing more with wingers, which is what I like to see Man U do. But
I think a lot of Man United fans would agree with that. Yeah,
the old attack. Play, yeah. We're not quite as fast and blistering as we used to be when you had like Giggs, Beckham, Ronaldo, but we're still getting there. We're not perfect. I think these last 5-6 games have shown us we play good opposition and we beat them. They maybe weren't as good as they could have been.
I think that's fair. Maybe a good time to play them, but still.
And if you had told me at the end of this season that we'd be third, we'd only be a point behind Arsenal, we'd be ahead of Man City, you know, and there was the outside chance that we could have won the league, then I would have taken it no questions asked.
Absolutely. But I should clarify that they're 4 points off Arsenal with a game in hand.
But
I completely agree with you, and I do think that's a very fair assessment of their year. And of course, United aren't going to win the league, but they are third, and you know, Louis van Gaal will be the first to remind us that top four was the target.
Yep.
So, you know, while we're on the subject, how do the bookies actually see the top four shaping up in these final weeks?
So, we have Arsenal, who, odds-wise, are 1 to 100.
Whoa.
So, you'd have to put 100 quid
that's
on to win a pound.
That's refreshing, I tell you.
So, top four is pretty much sewn up. United are 1 to 16. So you can say top four is sewn up for them as well. Same as City. So, really, you're looking at probably either of the Manchester clubs to something drastic to happen and for them to fail to, for the likes of Liverpool, Spurs and Southampton
right.
to get a top four spot. Just to give you their odds, Liverpool are 13-2 to finish in the top four.
Okay.
The Saints and Spurs are both 66-1. They're the best odds I could find. Obviously, wow. they're different depending on the bookie you go to.
And in terms of within the top four, I mean, I'm just having a little look at the run-in for Chelsea, Arsenal, United and City. Obviously, massive crunch game between Arsenal and Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it will have too much of an effect on who wins the league. I think we'd all have to agree. But not too many difficult games left for either of those sides, bar the game at Old Trafford, second last game of the year, Arsenal and Man United.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a fantastic game.
Well, that's the one I was probably most looking forward to. It's the one I most want to win. Because, frankly, losing to Chelsea, you kind of I would have expected
at
to lose
at
to
Stamford Bridge. At they Stamford haven't lost Bridge. Them in a year. Let's not yeah. forget.
So, I would have expected
you might have
that.
To write that one off. Yeah.
But Arsenal, Man United, we've got a very, very good record against you, barring that FA Cup defeat, which I'm sure you're going to bring up soon.
No, I wasn't. you did it for me.
That could be what decides second place.
Yeah, you it know? Does look that way. And I mean, Man City. I mean, how much? No, let's put it this way. Pellegrini's gone.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, you could say yeah. that. I mean, I'm not so sure. I think they could give him a bit longer.
Really?
Well, there's a lot of... There's this tendency to just sack managers when they don't perform well.
At Manchester City, yes.
At Manchester City, of course. But, like, he's... Who do they bring in? So... It's a completely different topic, but yeah.
No, Klopp. we have strayed yeah. from it completely. So, but why not? Let's run with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but so Klopp is obviously the most obvious choice. Yes. He's just left Dortmund, or he's said he's leaving Dortmund. That's who you get in. But I don't know.
No.
Just something about it that just doesn't. I don't think they'll sack him at the end of the season. I think they might give him more time.
I've got to be honest. I would be amazed if they haven't sacked him at the end of the season.
Yeah.
I really would.
I mean, I think it really does all depend. If they manage to overtake us, then you could get a bit longer, but maybe you're
okay,
right.
Okay, fair enough. Mm. Well, look, it's certainly going to be going to be fascinating to see who can claim those lucrative Champions League spots. As you mentioned, Spurs, Liverpool, and even Southampton will still think they're in with a shot. And when we return, we'll talk a little bit more about Liverpool and, of course, also Arsenal, as the two were in action in the FA Cup this weekend. Remember, you can tweet us your thoughts on the top four running at IOTP Show all week long, and I could be giving you a shout out live on Shoreditch Radio. But as it's time now for a musical break, I've decided to dedicate this one to Chelsea's Eden Hazard, as I do believe he will soon be announced as the Premier League Player of the Year. I'm frankly a huge fan of this guy, and I'll be honest, the link may be a little tenuous here, but I guess you could say he's found himself a cheerleader right here in the studio. Omi and Cheerleader on In Off The Post, back after this.
I found myself
apologies to anyone who had the mental image of my skinny legs in a skirt waving a pair of pom-poms for Eden Hazard forced upon them there. But that song just sounds so good in the sun. I'm hoping you'll find a way to forgive me. You are listening, of course, to In Off The Post here on Shoreditch Radio. Remember, the podcast of the show is now available to download free from the iTunes store. And you simply have to all you have to do is follow us on Twitter for all the links you'll ever need to any of that. Alternatively, of course, you can just search for us on the store and hit subscribe to stay right up to date. But, John, it's now time to take a trip down Wembley Way and to revisit a weekend of semi-final football. And I think I'm going to start with Sunday's tie between Aston Villa and Liverpool. Arsenal have by this time already booked their place in the final and will be joined shortly by a good friend of the show who was at Wembley on Saturday, and who will be giving us his thoughts on the game in just a moment. But on Sunday, a resurgent Villa side managed to come back from 1-0 down against Liverpool and win 2-1 and earn that right to return to Wembley in May to face the holders Arsenal in a bid to lift their first piece of silverware since the early 1980s. And, you know, before Villa fans get upset, nobody counts the Intertoto Cup, all right? and frankly, we cannot talk about Villa without talking about the new boss, Tim Sherwood. You know, their outstanding FA Cup semi-final win was a triumph in, you know, for me anyway, in Sherwood's own image, as they produced the sort of performance that really mixed bold tactical ambition with admirable resilience. And if any one player, and John, I hope you'll agree with me on this, has embodied, you know, or personified even that renewed optimism and confidence around the club since Sherwood's come in the door, it has to be 19-year-old Jack Grealish. I mean, he just strolled around Wembley like it was a second home to him. He was absolutely, I mean, he was just brimming with confidence. The occasion didn't get to him. I just thought he was fantastic and has been since Sherwood has really shown that faith in him. And, you know, you have to say Sherwood is almost becoming renowned for placing his faith in these young players wherever he goes now. You've got, obviously, he's kick-started the blossoming careers now of Harry Kane, Nabil Bentaleb, even Ryan Mason to an extent while he was at Spurs. And is this something that Sherwood should get more credit for? Do you think he's taken seriously enough, considering that he's one of these managers that's going into Premier League clubs and doing something that I bang on about on a regular basis, playing young English players?
I think he's got that image, and it's a very, very good image. I think in terms of Aston Villa, I think Lambert was playing young players before he got there. I think it's fair to say that they didn't have massive amount of resources in terms of transfer money, and players that they did buy maybe didn't turn out the way they expected it to. So he's had to put a lot of faith in young players. But I think Sherwood has got them to play out of their skin. They're playing like Premier League players as opposed to young kids who really don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And it was the same as when he was at Spurs. I mean, people mention Harry Kane, all his loan spells was didn't do very well.
No, not at all. Then
he plays for Spurs and he scores. You know, he wants credit for the player he's turned into. And he's done, and Grealish is a good example of that. And Delph as well. He's played very well. I mean, you know, he got the England call-up.
Mm-hmm. Had a great year, Fabian Delph.
So, we will see what happens in the final. I mean, they played very, very well. Their form has turned. But for them, this is going to be an absolutely gigantic, especially when you look at their form against Arsenal in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. Lost 5-0, lost 3-0. They're going to have to really...
And let's not forget, it's not as though they can kind of shut up shop and wait till May. They've still got a relegation battle going on.
Yeah.
They're not out of it yet. I mean, you kind of fancy them to pull themselves out of it the way it's been going.
The form that they're in, they're very, very lucky in terms of Benteke is all of a sudden just...
Well, absolutely. I mean, I was going to come to that, man.
The striker that we expected him to be all season. And is it 9-7?
It is. 9-7. And I mean, we have to remember, not so long ago, he cut a pretty forlorn figure. He almost completely disinterested under Paul Lambert. Yeah. And as you just said, 9 goals in his last 7 games. You know, granted, Sherwood's arrival did actually coincide with him kind of shrugging off this ruptured ankle tendon, whatever, Achilles tendon, which is obviously a difficult injury for a lot of footballers to recover from. And that's, you know, good fortune aside, Sherwood again has to get the credit for that.
Yeah, I think players want to play for him. It's almost like when people used to say players want to play for Harry Redknapp or players want to play for Mourinho. They want to play for him. And it was the same at Spurs. I think, like, you look at Adebayor now. The guy doesn't even get a look in, and you know, where is he? He's earning how much money on the bench. But when Sherwood was there, he was playing for him, and he was playing well. So I think he motivates the players that he has, and obviously
Is there any more to him than that? Is he a, is he simply a man motivator? Does he have an, does he have a tactical neuron up there somewhere?
I mean, you see the type of things he does on the pitch and his post press conferences and things like that. But he must do. His record is very, very good in terms of win percentages as well. And what's Aston Villa's form? I don't know it off by heart, but they've not actually lost that many games since he's gone in charge.
No, it's been fantastic. It's been a fantastic turnaround. And one thing that I have heard a lot of people crediting him with in terms of tactics now, something that doesn't get spoken enough about, I think, is the way that he's got Aston Villa, apparently anyway, according to various sources around the club, to play the ball forward to Benteke much earlier. They're giving him the sort of service that he just wasn't getting before. And it's obviously working for him. I mean, a goal scorer needs to be fed.
At the end of the day, I mean, you've seen much better, well, much more famous goal scorers not getting that type of service. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I mean, I can look at Falcao, I can look at other players, and you say, well, if they don't get the ball, they can't score.
That's it.
That's basically it. And especially in like Aston Villa, they've got a young team who can drive forward. And Benteke is the folk. If he's leading the line and he's doing it well, then
they're a whole different animal when he's playing like that. I think you're right. I absolutely agree. And just, I mean, you touched on it just briefly, but Aston Villa have to play at home now: QPR, West Ham, Burnley, and Everton.
That's a good run for them.
I mean, it's pretty decent, right?
I mean, if they win, I would think the Burnley one. West Ham on an absolutely terrible run, so you expect them to get points there. Then you're saying they're safe in the league, at least. And if they do very well in these games, hopefully it builds momentum for them it's all about the FA Cup.
Well, that's it. And now they're not just playing for the Premier League lives, they're playing for a starting place at Wembley in May. Yeah.
So these players are going to have to impress even more in training. Yeah.
And look, there were, of course, two sides involved in Sunday's game at Wembley. And, of course, the result meant that the romantics out there now will be denied an opportunity to see Steven Gerrard take his final bow for Liverpool on his birthday, I believe, in a Wembley final. And if we're totally honest, he looks as though he's really run out of steam already, hasn't he?
He's not. I've spoken to Liverpool fans as well, and this season has been... It's not the Gerrard that they want to remember, which is a real shame. I mean, he is a great player. As much as I dislike Liverpool as a Man United fan, he is a fantastic player. And it's a shame to see a player who is as good as him just not perform to the standards that you expect. From my perspective, it's kind of funny as well. Like you see, like Liverpool. That I know, I had some missed tweets about. Oh, he's booked tickets to see Gerrard on his 35th birthday party, you know, and all this stuff. But it's a shame. But they weren't good enough on the day. You know, you could say as well that they're missing a key striker, and like they're a different animal with Sturridge up front.
That's a fair comment. But at the same time, when you're watching Rodgers, you know, changing tactics maybe 2-3 times. Twice in the first half, then he reverts to it, pulls off Markovic, 3 at the back, 4 at the back. Didn't know what was going on.
And the team must be confused.
Well, absolutely.
You really don't know what you're doing,
do
you?
It filters down, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, is Rodgers at risk here after the season he's had? Off the back of what was an incredible season, a season that they made DVDs about.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? It's almost like he overachieved and now he's a victim of it.
Mm.
Because people are going to expect the same. They didn't do well in Europe this year. And they would have expected top four. And now they've basically got nothing.
Well, one thing I found really interesting this season is that the Liverpool that we got to know last year, that in-your-face, full-on pressing game, they can dish it out, but they really can't take it. When Arsenal and United dealt it out to them, they didn't know what was going on.
Well, they got found out. I mean, this is where you say tactical changes, though. They don't play exactly the same as they did last season.
No.
And they don't press as fast as they used to.
And, of course, that's got something to do with the players that he has at his disposal. With no Suarez, it is a different proposition altogether.
Suarez as well is just... That's what we come back to. If you have an absolutely fantastic striker, it can make such a big difference.
But is that fair to keep coming back to that? I mean, even after all this time, they were paid handsomely for Luis Suarez.
Oh,
and
did
Rodgers do enough in the transfer market to fill the void? No.
No. No, he didn't. He didn't buy well. I mean, at the end of the day, he bought players that maybe he didn't need, and you spent 60 million on Balotelli, who we know is not a proven goal scorer. Was he scored one goal for Liverpool in the Premier League? So it's a shocking return. What you buy Lambert as well, who's
barely played.
So you can't even be angry at the guy for not scoring because he doesn't get minutes. You know,
but you can be angry at Rodgers for signing someone on what you could argue to have been purely sentimental reasons.
Who are we talking about?
Ricky Lambert. Good season at Southampton, don't get me wrong, but a Liverpool fan who was desperate to play for the club in his twilight.
But then it's just, what's the point of buying him if you're not playing? And they've spent money elsewhere as well when you look at like Lovren, who's been 20 million, it's not been very good.
Mm-hmm.
Lallana's not really had a chance this season. He's also, injuries have sort of hampered what he could have done. But, you know...
Remember, listeners out there, you can, of course, also tweet us your thoughts at IOTP Show, and I'm bracing myself for the criticism after what we've just said about Steven Gerrard. But there you go. For now, it's time for another song. This one goes out to Sherwood, who simply has the formula for inspiring young players and for reviving the fortunes of out-of-sorts superstars. Just do me a favour and imagine Christian Benteke singing this about his new manager, Stephanie Mills, here on In Off The Post. Welcome back to In Off The Post, everyone. Stephanie Mills there with a Never Knew Love Like This Before. I had to play. The image of Benteke. I think it would be fantastic. And all it took from Tim Sherwood, just a little love, you see?
There we go.
One final thing I'd like to say about that Sherwood appointment, by the way. To everyone out there who's given Randy Lerner any credit for bringing Tim in, please just stop, yeah? Because it's no masterstroke. Okay, Tim was without a doubt the cheapest / most recognisable option available at the time, and it really is as simple as that. Yeah, there was only one thing on his mind there. It was money, not the club, not the fans. Well, look, maybe that's a topic for discussion for another week. By all means, tweet me, at IOTP Show. Tell me if you disagree with that. But anyway, John, one game left to digest, and that is, of course, the Arsenal match. Arsenal are on their way back to Wembley, and have a listen to what happened the last time we were there.
Wilshere. Here's Giroud. Oh, brilliantly taken. Absolutely brilliantly taken by Aaron Ramsey. He's got one right, and Arsenal finally lead deep into extra time. It looks as though, in the end, it's going Arsene Wenger's way.
And to help us get a feel for the occasion, a very, very good friend of mine is here on the show now. Mo Haider, a.k.a. Arsenal Mo, has joined us on the line right now. Mo, how are you, sir?
Yes, not too bad. Looking forward to a lovely day out at Wembley again for the, fifth time in a year now. It's becoming a second home.
First of all, Mo, I know you were at Wembley on Saturday, and I imagine you were quite, maybe a little nervous up until the final whistle, but give us, if you can, a flavour of what the atmosphere was like amongst both sets of fans on Saturday.
Well, do you know what? I think Arsenal fans, anywhere other than our home stadium, we set very high standards for ourselves. We've got a great, great set of away fans. So I think we expected the atmosphere to be really fervent and really, you know, special on Saturday. But for some reason, it was a little bit subdued. And I'm saying this, but it's strange because this is kind of the reports I've heard from the majority of fans that were there. However, my personal experience was actually really good. I had great seats, and I was sitting down. And in the North Bank, usually when I'm at the Arsenal, everyone stands up. At away games, everyone stands up.
Yeah.
I got to my seat, great seats, as I said, but everyone behind me was sitting down. And you don't want to spoil the occasion for other people.
Fair enough.
So I thought, well, I don't want to sit down the whole game. So I went up to the back of the stand that I was in, and I said to the kind of people there who were standing at their seats, do you mind if I just stand in front of you? And they were happy with it. So stood there, and the people that I was around after I stood up there were absolutely brilliant. We were singing all game, and I thought the atmosphere was brilliant. So I was a bit kind of surprised when I you know, heard accounts of people saying it was a really poor atmosphere. We saw people leaving early, because I think it did depend where you were in the ground. But I think on the whole, it has to be said, the Arsenal fans weren't at their finest on Saturday. But I think that might be down, with all due respect, to the opposition. I think Arsenal fans expected us to go and walk it, and unfortunately we weren't up for the game how we should have been. Mm. And credit to Reading, because they gave us a good game of it. They put us through to extra time, and we only won through a mistake.
Absolutely, right.
Not, you know, anything more deserving, really. So, yeah, well, it was a bit disappointing, to be honest with you, but I'm sure it'll be completely different for the final.
Well, hey, maybe just like you said, you know, it's becoming a second home. People are getting a little too comfortable at Wembley. But look, Arsenal now do have the chance to become the first side since Chelsea back in 2010 and only the 10th in history to retain the FA Cup trophy. And I mean, we've just waxed lyrical about the threat that Villa now carry with Sherwood now at the helm. But Mo, how do you fancy Arsenal's chances in the final?
Look, you know, before the game, I said to a few people, and publicly, I said, don't really care who we get, Liverpool or Villa, because ultimately, if we play to our true potential, we will win that trophy. I wouldn't say that about all the teams. You know, like, look, you know, we all know how good teams like Barcelona are, for example. Mm. If we were going to play a one-off game against them, I wouldn't make that statement. The fact is, Arsenal on their day are better than Liverpool on their day, and Arsenal on their day are better than Aston Villa on their day. So I think our chances are brilliant. You know, it could be a much, much harder game. Aston Villa are in great form right now. I think that has to be completely respected. Mm-hmm. Tim Sherwood, who's an Arsenal fan, will be looking for the Arsenal job. Probably he'll be looking to impress. He'll be wanting to lift that trophy. And I think Tim Sherwood's got a real point to prove in English football. And almost kind of, I'm sure he won't admit this, but maybe stick two fingers up to Tottenham. So I think he'd love to kind of get the FA Cup trophy under his belt. So I think it will be a tough game. Christian Benteke is on great form. Fabian Delph's performing well. Jack Grealish, as we saw, was really, really good on the day against Liverpool. So it will be a tough game. There will be challenges, but we have got superb quality in our team. We're playing quite well, apart from the Reading game, which is a bit of a blip. Mm. But I hope we can continue that form, and I think we'll win the trophy. I'll be very disappointed if we don't.
And I completely agree with you. I was going to just about to mention, in fact, our incredible vein of form. And without a doubt, at least for me, playing the best football in the league at the moment, I agree with you, probably the Reading game aside. You know, just reached the 19th FA Cup final. That's an English record. Sanchez scoring an incredible 22 goals in his maiden year. Finally, the pennies dropped for a lot of fans out there about Mesut Ozil's real worth. And now, you know, words like consistency and resilience being used to describe Arsenal once again. So, for you, Mar, just what I'm curious to know, what do you think has been, if there has been any, a secret to the re-emergence of Arsenal as a real serious threat? Okay, maybe this year passed us by, we took too long to get going, but next year, certainly.
Listen, I found it ridiculous, the amount of criticism Arsenal have taken. I personally think, look, it's quite simple. Arsenal, in 2004, were invincible. In 2005, Roman Abramovich came on the scene, and that's it. With Arsene Wenger, he was so far ahead of other teams, but the one thing you cannot compete with is billions and billions of money, billions and billions of pounds. It's just impossible. So that completely changed the face of football, and since then, I think Arsene Wenger had a long-term project where he knew what he had to do, and that was to get on a financial level playing field. And that's ultimately what the secret is, and it's probably a very obvious secret to Arsenal fans that have followed the club's fortunes. It's just a case of this project coming to, you know, a full circle end. And now that we have actually got a bit of financial clout, we can attract players such as Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez, approximately, what, 80 million combined. Then you saw what they can do, the way they linked up for the first goal in the semi-final of the FA Cup. So, for me, it's not much of a secret, but that's all it is. You cannot compete with money. It's quite simple. Chelsea, you know, I think we all know they're basically a nothing club. And due to the breakup of the USSR, somehow that translates to them winning trophies. So it's not a coincidence. That's what it comes down to. Unfortunately, football is heavily, heavily influenced by money these days. And, you know, Arsenal will only get closer and closer to the very, very top, because with financial fair play, that kind of financial doping element of the game is being squeezed, and it's it's not as easy to exploit anymore. So as Arsenal improve in terms of their commercial partnerships and increase their revenues, and more of that money can be spent on the playing squad, that gap will decrease, and eventually we will see the fruits of Arsene Wenger's labour over the last 8 or 9 years.
Amen. And Mo, I'm joined by my co-host John this hour, and he's got a question for you now.
So, hi Mo. Yep. You're firmly very much in the Wenger in camp then.
Well, no, that's the thing. You see, this. I'll go on record and talk about what I think about the whole Wenger in or Wenger out thing. For me, that conversation frustrates me. And the thing I always say to people when they ask me, are you Wenger in or Wenger out? I always ask them, if I ask you to leave your house tomorrow, if I ask you to move out your house tomorrow, would you say yes or no? And people always say, well, it depends on where I'm moving. And I say, well, exactly. It depends on who's coming in. If someone said to me, Arsene Wenger out, David Moyes in, I'll say, thank you very much, but I'll keep Arsene Wenger. If someone said to me, Arsene Wenger out, but Pep Guardiola in, I'd say, well, do you know what? I find it very hard to turn that one down.
So, you know, can I ask, if I told you, you win the FA Cup this season, but Jurgen Klopp wants to come and manage Arsenal, what do you say to that?
Absolutely not. No, I think Arsene Wenger's a superior manager to Jurgen Klopp.
Okay, nice. Fair enough. Even if he doesn't win the FA Cup, then what do you say?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. When we start getting into conversations like this, we're basically saying, I'm going to decide whether Arsene Wenger is a better manager than Jurgen Klopp over a period of 90 minutes. Never mind 90 minutes. It could be 1-1. After 85 minutes, we might get a penalty, might be saved, and they score in the counter-attack. So now we're talking about one phase of play in a game is going to determine whether Arsene Wenger is better than Jurgen Klopp or vice versa. I don't make decisions like that. I'm going to make my decisions about who I rate as a better manager based on a hell of a lot more than what can boil down to one phase of play in one game.
Yeah,
and looking at Arsene Wenger's record, looking at what he's achieved, looking at his legacy compared to Jurgen Klopp and everything that he's achieved, and all the challenges that he's facing in comparison to Arsene Wenger, overall, an informed, educated, well-rounded opinion is that Arsene Wenger is a superior manager.
Okay, then. But can I ask one last question then? Let's say you don't win the FA Cup, and next year you don't mount the challenge that we've seen towards the latter end of the season. How long do you keep on going without... Because all due respect to the FA Cup, but it's not a Premier League and it's not a Champions League. So when do you finally say to Arsene Wenger, the time's up?
I think, some people go too far in terms of disrespecting the FA Cup and they don't class it as a major honour. Even some journalists, and I question the journalists that do that, because I feel like if you're saying the FA Cup isn't a major honour, potentially you've got an agenda against a team that... in a chance of winning it, and I think we see that quite a lot. But I do agree with you. The FA Cup, for me as an Arsenal fan, because I've been an Arsenal fan all my life, I'm used to success.
Yeah.
And the FA Cup for me is an absolute minimum expectation every single year. You know, a trophy is an absolute minimum expectation, and the League Cup is not a big enough trophy for me. So it's got to be the FA Cup as an absolute minimum. And once you start winning that, you know, then you have to say to yourself, we want more. You have to push on to bigger and better things. And it's interesting because last year we had the parade for the FA Cup. The time we won that previously in 2005, we didn't bother with a parade. And I think that shows the difference in kind of what kind of success the club had been enjoying. I think it will be an interesting one to see now. If we win the FA Cup this year, are we going to have a parade again? And will it be as brilliantly attended as the last one? You are 100% correct in that we will start to expect more. But I think Arsene Wenger has done enough at this club to leave on his own terms. Unless he's managing the club to the club's detriment, I would never, ever, you know, want to push him out the door. If he's winning us trophies, it might not be the trophy that we want, but after what he's done for our club, I think I would be reluctant to ask him to leave.
Mo, as always, an absolute pleasure to speak to you. You know, there's nothing I love more than a little Wenger love, you know, here on In Off The Post. An absolute pleasure, as always. Thank you so much for your time this evening. And I look forward to getting you back here in the studio with me in the future. Is that right?
Look forward to it. I can't wait.
Thank you, Mo. And those were the thoughts of Mo Haydar, a.k.a. Arsenal Mo. How good was that? I love that. I feel like I couldn't get involved. I feel like I can't touch that. I'll let Mo do the talking. He says it so perfectly. This is, of course, In Off The Post, kicking some sense back into football. That's the sort of guest I like as well. Full of sense, that man. And don't go anywhere, because Take A Bow is up next.
Nothing's easy when it comes to life, but that's how it goes. Everything that you want comes with a price, yeah. Silver rainbows.
John, my friend, I think it's been a great show. We can all agree. We've run the rule over both ends of the table, as well as all of the drama to have unfolded at Wembley over the last few days. Nothing left now, of course, but for someone to take a bow.
Well, take a bow, son. I mean that, take a bow. You have been immense.
This is the part of the show where we celebrate the wonderfully weird and the sensationally funny parts of a beautiful game. And John, I don't have to tell you the score. I've narrowed it down to just three contenders for the ultimate prize. And you pick a winner. And here we go. First up has got to be the Young Player of the Year nominee, Manchester United stopper David De Gea, for his wildly premature celebrations after thinking that Rooney had actually put United in front at Stamford Bridge. The second nominee. Now, this is an unusual one, but it's so good, I feel like it deserves a special mention. It has to go in. And it's actually for the Arsenal keeper, Wojciech Szczesny, who last week was forced to play 18 holes in a pairing just in front of me and my best mate, Zach. Now, Zach, who you know very well, John, then proceeded to chant, "Ospina!" after every single one of my tee shots for 18 holes. And the out-of-favour Arsenal number one was no more than a couple hundred yards away, I promise you. Maybe that explains some of his performance on Saturday. In fact, should we just end it there? Need I say any more? Do we know who the winner is this week?
I feel like I don't get a choice in it anyway, so...
Look, for his outstanding self-control, we have to award it to Arsenal's Wojciech Szczesny, this week's Take A Bow winner. Andy Gray, take us home.
I'll take a bow, son.
And I'm afraid that is all we have time for. Please join me in thanking my co-host for the hour, Mr. John Christodoulou.
Absolute pleasure once again. Thanks,
until
man.
Next time, my man. It is always a pleasure for us as well. And of course, to our special guest, Arsenal Mo, for joining us over the phone this afternoon. Always a pleasure to speak to him. And finally, to all of you, our wonderful listeners, for taking the time to tune in to the live broadcast, or indeed for catching up with the podcast of the show. Please do subscribe on iTunes and share the link with friends to help us promote it. Keep your questions, your thoughts, and your comments coming all week long. Remember that Twitter handle one final time is at IOTPShow. And above all, kick some sense back into football. This has been In Off The Post on Shoreditch Radio,
Have a great week.
Yes, I do. I believe that one day I will be where I was, right there, right next to you. And it's hard, the days just seem so dark. The moon and the stars are nothing without you. Your touch, your skin, where do I begin? No words can explain the way I'm missing you tonight. This emptiness, this hole that I'm inside. These tears, they tell their own story. Told me not to cry when you were gone. But the feeling's overwhelming. It's much too strong. Can I lay by your side next to you? Take care of you. Now don't want to be here if I can't be with you tonight. I'm reaching out to you. Can you hear my call? Hurt that I've been through. I'm missing you. I'm missing you like crazy.